What are we looking at in terms of what are the responses looking like?
I think about 80% of your A-listed yeses and 15% are maybes.
Okay, well, maybes are no's. Let's not live in a dream world. But who's in?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Sweet Smell of Succession, an unofficial recap podcast about the HBO original series Succession. I'm David Chen, the host of podcasts such as Culturally Relevant and The Filmcast. Joining me, as always, she is the co-host of podcasts such as Extra Hot Great, Listen to Sassy, and again with this, Tara Ariano. How is the Roy family doing this week?
It seems bad.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
I think they're doing pretty badly.
Yeah.
That was my sense.
They've only got two more episodes to turn things around for this season, so
well, I'm sure they're doing things right. I'm sure they're going to be all made up by the end of the season. So.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Well, welcome to the podcast. Every week, we recap the latest episode of Succession. We're going to spoil everything through this week's episode of Succession. That's Season 3, Episode 7 this week, Too Much Birthday. Mm-hmm. You can find more episodes of this podcast at successionpodcast.com. You can also email us at successionpodcast@gmail.com. Tara, before we dive into this week's episode and our overall thoughts on it, I thought it might be worth examining, talking about, discussing some of the reaction to last week's episode. Now, last week's episode was an episode that I really did not like, and you were not the hugest fan, although you liked it more than me.
Mm-hmm.
But the response online, from what I could tell, seems to have been rapturous. You know, like from what I could tell from my Twitter feed and reading reviews from folks such as Alan Sepinwall and Ingu Kang. And so I guess I just wanted to acknowledge that a lot of people loved that episode, and we did not love it as much. And after reading their thoughts, I don't know that I've changed my opinion on it, you know?
Yeah.
But I didn't know if you had any further thoughts along those lines, or if you had any reaction to kind of the other people's reaction to that episode.
I don't think that was 100% that it was rapturous. I mean, the Lily Lithborough post on Slate was, is Succession stuck in a rut?
Mm.
And I definitely can feel that, you know, over the course of the time of this series, like across all seasons, there definitely do seem to be certain kind of formats of episode that keep repeating. Like, everyone gets together at a industry enclave. Everyone gets together at a party that goes disastrously wrong, which is this week's. And, you know, stuff like that. There's a sort of the heisty one, like Safe Room or Retired Janitors of Idaho. You know, there's definitely formatting. And I wonder how much of this is due to the fact that, like, they've already done as many episodes of this show, or will have by the end of the season, as most British shows get in like their entire lifetime across 30 years.
and Jesse Armstrong very much comes from that world.
Yes.
It's kind of, yeah, the creator of Succession. Well, I have more thoughts on that, but why don't we talk about overall thoughts on this week's episode, Season 3, Episode 7, Too Much mm-hmm. Birthday. I am very curious. What did you think overall of this episode?
I mean, I appreciated the spectacle of it,
yes.
But I thought it was also very effective in terms of moving the characters forward in their own plot lines in the season, and especially it was a great / terrible showcase for Jeremy Strong as Kendall falling apart as his siblings keep saying, as is his that's his favorite, and that happens here too.
Mm-hmm.
Happy birthday. What did you think?
Here are my thoughts on the episode. I thought this was a very solid episode of Succession in terms of replicating the moments and dynamics that I like from the show.
Mm-hmm.
However, I also am worried about that same question that you mentioned from that Slate article. Is Succession stuck in a rut?
Yeah.
In the sense that I am worried about the willingness of the showrunners to take risks with these characters and move the plot along in a way that will disrupt the dynamic that they have, right?
Yeah.
The dynamic between these characters is so delicious, so delightful. The actors have amazing chemistry with each other. They're very plausibly a family, but you can also feel how biting a lot of their commentary is against each other. And it's just, you could not ask for a better ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is this very amazing alchemy that I would totally understand, like, you've gotten the alchemy, like, let's not fuck with it, is kind of what my protective reaction might be to that.
Yeah.
The problem with that, though, is that from a plot perspective, from what I can tell, this episode resets us back, not even to the status quo of season two, but to season one, basically. Like,
yeah.
And what I mean by that is particularly like the main issues around the Justice Department investigation appear to be over. You know, they might come back. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but like that seems to be basically over at this point. And so all the people in the family are basically out of danger, right?
Yes.
And so everything that happened at the end of season two, Jeremy Strong dropping the bomb and everything, like none of that matters anymore. You know, the dynamic between them has changed a bit, little bit between then and now. But like, again, think of the end of season one. Like Jeremy Strong was like betraying the family at the end of that season as well.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's not like this is a particularly brand new thing. And so with this whole investigation, I was like, ooh, this is interesting. This is interesting because it threatens to actually disrupt what the status quo and dynamic of the show might be.
Mm-hmm.
And what this episode shows in terms of the meta plot line of the show is that maybe the show is not interested in disrupting that at all.
Yeah.
And that's kind of disappointing given that I am looking now, I'm going to watch the show. I'm going to love the show no matter what, but I wish it would take more chances with the characters. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the answer to that is like the overarching meta story of this is like, whatever their day-to-day setbacks or disappointments or heartbreaks or whatever those are, they will be fine. Like nothing is ever going to happen to destroy these people. You know, like I don't think anyone ever thought anyone in the family was actually going to go to prison. Even Tom, like it just seemed like that was a very remote possibility, not just from a dramatic perspective, but just like a real world.
Right. Like, could you imagine a season where like, Tom Wamsgams like appears, you know, in a prison and like talking to Shiv behind the glass and everything.
Yeah.
Like it just doesn't, it never really felt like a real possibility. Right.
Right.
But yeah, but sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. And I mean, that was sort of the story of last week as well with the political conference, which is like all of those people could treat picking the next president as a game. Cause for them, it is a game. It doesn't matter who the president is. They're going to be fine. Like politics don't matter. Policy doesn't matter. All that matters in terms of Logan's perspective is, you know, the spectacle of who's going to pop the most on ATN. And everything else is just window dressing because they know nothing is fundamentally ever going to change for any of them. So
yeah.
That's, I mean, I feel like that's kind of the meta story of Succession as well, where it's just like there is this sort of gamesmanship and moving pieces around on the board, but ultimately they're always going to be as comfortable as any person possibly could be, really, other than emotionally, and no one is prepared to deal with that anyway, so we might as well not even really talk about it in terms of impacting their lives.
I am curious if there are any shows that come to mind that, like, in your opinion, have done a very good job of changing up the status quo and still continue to be successful, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would argue shows that I've recapped in the past, like Breaking Bad and Game of Thrones, fall into that category.
Yeah.
But I am curious if you have any in mind. And while you're thinking about that, one of the other things I wanted to mention is I remember hearing about the show Barry on HBO. You know,
yeah.
HBO Max, great show.
Mm-hmm.
And listening or watching a lot of the interviews of the showrunners of that, and the showrunner basically saying, so Barry is about Bill Hader, who plays a hitman who tries to get into Hollywood, like tries to break into Hollywood, right? And he's a hitman who tries to break into Hollywood. Great premise. And people love the show. It's aired for two seasons. And the showrunner was saying how the thing that was most difficult for him as a showrunner was upping the stakes of the show while not getting Barry killed.
Right.
Like that was what was most challenging for him. And it feels like a similar challenge, like it is presented to Succession as well, where they want to up the stakes, but they don't want to disrupt this dynamic that they have between all the characters. Right. And I think it would be hard to like up the stakes without doing that. And I think what the show has revealed with this episode is that they're not going to up the stakes that much. That's kind of what my sense is. Like, they're not going to put anyone in jail. They're not going to have anyone like break away from the company or doing, you know, like it would be you know, there's other plot lines one could imagine where, like, you know, one character does take the buyout and break off and, like, start their own company that goes up against Waystar Records or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. like, there's other plot lines that are possible than they're all vying for the crown and they keep getting fucked around with by Logan. Like, that's, and so, anyway, so do you have any thoughts on, like, what other shows kind of have a changing dynamic? I know I didn't ask you to prepare for this, so it's okay if you don't.
But. Two very different ones. The Americans was a show that, like Breaking Bad, really, their producers like to write themselves into a corner and then figure out how to get the characters out. And it wasn't so much that, I mean, the stakes were sort of the same the whole way through, but, like, other than on a personal level. So, you know, it built to a climax that I think was really dramatically satisfying, but, you know, their mission was always the same. So I don't know if that falls into your rubric. But the other one that I thought of immediately when you asked the question was Veep, where also another show that's sort of in the, like, extended Succession family, because there's a lot of crossover with the writers and creators and stuff. But where they had to, because that was a political show, there were elections, things did change, but, you know, it was, and then they had to adjust to different circumstances, including being out of office. And I thought that was, it was a very good show the whole way through, whether the lead character, the titular Veep, Selena, was in government or not. It was always sort of about her just striving, no matter where she was.
That is such a great example. And I think I was so impressed with Veep because they took real chances with the character of Selena Meyer, in the sense that when I started watching that show, my thought was, oh, this, the whole show is going to be about her as Veep, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's going to be the whole show. And she's going to keep trying to...
And it could have been, and would have still been very funny.
And it could have been, but I will not spoil what happens towards the final, like, 2 to 3 seasons of Veep, but suffice to say, that is not what happens. Like, she does not stay the Veep. And
yes.
And the show takes, like, genuine chances, and it ends up succeeding. You know, it would be like if basically Logan Roy was like, you know, I'm going to retire or something, you know, like something along those, that level of disruption is kind of what Veep experienced, and the show was still amazing. Right. So that's a great example. And it shows that it is in fact possible to shake things up and, like, still, but the thing is, you know, characters disappear, right? Like, mm-hmm. some of the characters that are earlier on, like a key part of the show, like, they go away or they have different jobs or whatever. And and most importantly, brand new characters are introduced that, like, become a major part of the show and are become integral to the show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've had a little bit of that this season with, like, Carl and stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know, you know, it's not as kind of game changing as what Veep did, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So anyway, just some overall thoughts, right, on where the show is. Overall, this episode was pretty good, you know, a lot mm-hmm. of lot of great moments, and the spectacle was awesome, as you said, but I do have some real questions about, like, where the show is going at this point. So
I have a guess, but I'm always wrong, so I'll bring it up when it happens.
Okay, cool. I want to hear about it. All right, but Tara, why don't you tell us what actually happened this episode?
Okay, two elements that we've been hearing about since Lion in the Meadow are converging: Kendall's midlife crisis, 40th birthday party, and Waystar's acquisition of a tech company called Gojo. No one in Kendall's actual family wants to go to Kenfest, as Shiv calls it, until at least two of them are forced to, because Lucas Mattson, the CEO of Gojo, has sent what Logan thinks of as the B team to a meeting at Waystar. So Logan's ready to spike the whole deal and try for Pierce again until Roman and Shiv realize Mattson will probably be at the party and they can try and pitch him there. And just about, you know, the B team, Carl says the CFO is in this delegation, which I think is also Carl's job. And, you know, feel like anyone at the C level is pretty high up.
Yeah, I mean, the whole dynamic this whole season has been Logan does not talk to anyone except the most powerful person.
Right.
And this was true with, like, the Justice Department as well, in episode 1, I think, where he's like, he says to Jerry, you do the tap dance or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to tap dance with that person. So anyway, agreed, the CFO is pretty important, but it doesn't make sense to Logan as an alpha male to meet with the CFO. I would say. Yeah.
But it also seems like Logan's ready to dismiss Mattson with a fuck him, in part because fuck him is what Carrie says she thinks of him. The rise of Carrie. Very subtle plot arc this season.
That's the most important opinion in the room right there is Carrie. So,
apparently. Yeah. So another element we've been hearing about for a while has also, it seems, been dealt with. Jerry has heard from Justice that it seems like Kendall made a bigger deal of his bombshell documents than he probably should have. So Justice is basically fine with Waystar and doesn't plan to pursue prison terms for anyone. And no one even really notices Tom slip out of the toasting in Logan's office to basically trash Greg's office like he's Axl Rose in a hotel room in relief, and then kiss Greg on the forehead on his way out. And hilariously, Tom starts flipping furniture and kicking boxes before he tells Greg this is happiness. So Greg is just terrified for most of it, justifiably, since it was not that long ago Tom was trying to roughhouse with him in the same room.
It's an incredible scene, and Matthew McFadden, basically, I think that's how you pronounce his name, he is probably my MVP for the season, I would say. Like,
yeah, he's great.
His is the most compelling arc for me this season, and it's an amazing performance. I also really appreciate, like, what you're seeing when Tom is with Greg is who he really is.
Yeah.
You know, with everyone else, Logan Roy, Shiv, he needs to be a different person.
Yeah.
He needs to put on this, you know, air of what he thinks that person wants to see. But with Greg, he can truly be himself. And there's something kind of beautiful about that and terrifying. And we see it in this scene. So, good stuff.
Terrifying for Greg. Yeah. Yes. Because I don't know if Greg feels the same way about Tom. It seems like a very one-sided relationship in that respect.
I think that's true. Yes.
And I don't really follow the Succession hashtag, so it's only belatedly gotten to me that people ship Tom and Greg, and I can't tell if this is mostly for fun, which if so I get it, or if there is a sizable faction of the audience that really thinks they might be romantically involved at some point. Like, I guess the forehead kiss may just confuse things further, but to me this is more a fraternal love than anything else.
You know, I had read beforehand, I think it was like a Vulture profile or something like that, where they said that the costume people on the show were talking about, like, the main sort of love affair in the show is between Tom and Greg, and not Tom and Shiv. And I thought that was interesting. And I was all like, yeah,
what, love affair or love story? Because
love
different.
Story, yes. Good point. Yeah. And I feel the same way, that it's probably all just in good fun, but his comment about the "I'd castrate you in a second," like last episode, a couple episodes ago, was like, I was kind of like, that's kind of a weird thing to say, you know, even for someone who you kind of have this bromance with, you know, it's just like it's a little bit off kilter. It's a little bit off kilter. But I would agree. I think the likelihood of these two ending up together is pretty remote for a variety of reasons. So, yeah.
We also get Jerry repeating, it's not a celebration. All of this still isn't definite, and I couldn't tell him how much we were supposed to make of that in terms of Tom maybe reacting prematurely. What did you think?
I think they're out of the woods with regards to the legal thing, and I think that the reason she's saying all that stuff is because she's a lawyer,
right?
Like,
sure,
it's not technically over yet, but it's basically over. You know, we can't, still a long road. I think they kept repeating, like, long road ahead or something along those lines.
Yes,
right. And that, you know, I have been in meetings with corporate lawyers before, and it felt like they nailed kind of the caveats that would come with a situation like that, which is they're basically like, hey, we won, but FYI, it's not over yet. Because the lawyer is never going to say definitively,
we're totally
basically
fine,
anything. Yes. They don't say definitively anything, because anything could happen. Right.
Right.
But if I had to guess, I think it's over. So those are my thoughts. Yeah.
Well, the most important thing for Tom, not that he seems to dwell on it, is that before he slips out of the room, Logan quietly just tells him, I'll remember.
That was that was kind of a beautiful moment, I thought. It's just kind of like,
it's always a little sinister.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. It definitely has sinister undertones.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like, because Tom has been suffering so much this season, you know, it's nice that somebody acknowledged his sacrifices, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it seemed like Shiv barely remembered to be like, hey, great for everyone. And Tom, like, okay.
Does not give a shit at all. So, yeah.
No, she doesn't. So, moving on to the party, there was a running gag on Frasier, which is a show I assume you're very familiar with since it takes place in your hometown of Seattle, just like how I love Walker on the CW. Just kidding.
Mm-hmm.
But the running gag on Frasier was that Niles and Frasier kept trying to throw parties. They were always absolute disasters. And I'm not saying the writers of Succession are directly influenced by Frasier, of course, parties are useful plot devices to create a lot of tension and conflict, which is why one ended in fisticuffs on basically every episode of The OC. But if I were a Roy, I would stop going to parties. Like, there's also Tom's bachelor party, Logan's surprise party in Dundee, Shiv's wedding. You know, the wedding itself was fine, but some bad shit did go down there.
Indeed, indeed. Also a common dynamic in Game of Thrones as well. Anytime there was a wedding, something disastrous always happened. Mm-hmm. But we seem to be heading towards another wedding in this show as well. So I'm very curious what secrets might arise as a result of this wedding coming up. So we'll see.
Yeah. Anyway, all this way of saying Kendall's party is fucking terrible, not only because it is extremely overwrought and self-conscious, but because he doesn't really have any friends or, it seems, any capacity for joy or happiness or pleasure.
You know what this reminds me of, by the way? And I'm sorry I didn't put this in the notes, but like, now that I'm thinking about it, do you ever watch those Comedy Central roasts?
Mm-hmm. I have, yeah.
I saw... So I have to say they are a guilty pleasure of mine.
Okay.
I do watch a lot of the roast. I've watched every single roast, basically.
Okay.
And I remember reading an article that really struck me. It was in, when was this published? Doesn't have a date on it. Oh, it was March of 2015, so 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The Verge published an article called "The Loneliest Roast, Justin Bieber Does Public Penance on Comedy Central." And it was about Justin Bieber's roast. And basically, at these roasts, what is supposed to happen is, like, a bunch of your friends show up and they say, like, the most hurtful things about you. But because they're your friends, you know, it's all out of love. And, of course, Comedy Central also uses the opportunity to throw in a bunch of their up-and-coming comedy stars as well to, like, promote them.
Yes.
And so you kind of accept that that's part of the roast, but... at the very least, like, it's a bunch of your friends, you know, all celebrating and you're all getting paid a bunch of money and getting a lot of exposure.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about Justin Bieber's roast is basically like he had no friends on stage.
You know,
like a bunch of the people on stage were basically people he admired, like Shaquille O'Neal and Chris D'Elia and Kevin Hart. But like there was no one on stage that was like his friend. And anyway, when as we're talking about Kendall Roy throwing a birthday party where he has no friends show up, I think back to the 2015 Justin Bieber roast on Comedy Central where he did not have any friends.
Yeah.
And I think he's definitely turned himself around. That was him probably as one of his lowest points, Justin mm-hmm. Bieber, when he had been embroiled in a series of international scandals.
Yeah.
But now I think he seems to have turned it around and is, you know, well beloved by the public. And, you know, it's not that there aren't people that love him or anything like that. Obviously he has millions of fans, but
yeah.
I just thought the dynamic was kind of interesting. Like when I'm watching the roast, I'm like, oh, haha, this is funny. All these ribald jokes. Then thinking back on it, I'm like, wow, that was kind of really sad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So anyway,
yes.
So tell us about this party, Tara. What'd you think of it?
Well, Kendall's planning a performance and we'll get to that. But in your opinion, what was the cringiest element of the big event? Here are some options. He tells Comfrey the people working the party should drink and be cool, but also still do their fucking jobs. He has it at Hudson Yard. He puts the notorious K-E-N, Time to Die, on a big sign outside. He makes everyone turn in their phones because Kendall's present is for them to be present. He has all the guests get birthed into the world of Kendall Roy through a vagina hallway. He makes big mocked up newspaper front pages. about the future misadventures of his siblings while Kendall himself gets elected president of the World Federation. He makes a replica of his office at Waystar. He builds this giant treehouse for the VVVIPs. And he serves 40s of malt liquor at the bar.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty exhaustive catalog of all the cringy elements of it, I would agree. What, you know, I love your recaps, Tara, because they're so detailed. What is the problem with having it at Hudson Yards? I'm not familiar with this.
It's a somewhat controversial development because, you know, it's very grotesque and large and ostentatious. And
Got it. You know. Yeah, no, that's a good list of things that are cringy about this thing. And I mean, my favorite part about it when he's like, you know, this feels like an asshole's birthday party and I specifically didn't want that.
Yeah.
But it's like, maybe that's because it is.
Right.
Maybe that's because it is.
I mean, isn't that the Raylan Givens line where it's like, if you run into an asshole first thing in the morning, then you met an asshole. But if you run into assholes all day, you're the asshole.
You're the asshole. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Indeed.
So after everything they've been through lately, Kendall is surprised and happy to see his siblings there. But since they all are who they are, no one can just express a sincere emotion and instead relate to each other through casual verbal cruelty. Clip two.
Wait a second. Who let you guys in? This is friends only.
Shouldn't it be empty then?
Beat me by 1 second.
Happy birthday, old man.
Just to say, I'm only here because I heard this was going to be a five-dimensional catastrophe and I want to watch you crash and burn. Also, I just farted, so you're welcome. Happy birthday.
Thanks. You shouldn't have.
Oh, yeah, all right.
Oh, Z.
Man, it's like you feel old. You sure you're only 40? You look like shit.
What, no card? I'm disappointed because you normally write me such lovely letters.
Oh, yeah, no, I couldn't find one that said both happy birthday and get well soon.
Well, I'm glad you came. It says a lot.
Yeah, it was a 10-minute drive. Okay, well, give me a hug before you start weeping.
That's also a callback to the last hug I think we saw them have when he was weeping in season two. And, you know, I have to ask, is the lack of Roy sibling interaction maybe one of the things that's making this season feel, I have less successful in the notes. That's maybe too harsh, but more up and down, I think, than previous seasons have been.
I mean, do you feel like there has been less sibling interaction this season? Like, what are you kind of, why do you feel that that's the case?
Because we've rarely seen all of them together, other than at the top of the season.
Right. I feel like the first two episodes, we saw like a bunch of them. Right?
We did.
Like, there was one episode where they're all like in a room together. But I would agree, like, this scene of this episode was like pure, like, Roy sibling, you know, Roy siblings bouncing off each other in a way that's kind of joyous, you know, kind of what the best of what the show has to offer in terms of its dynamic. It's like the every single remark is so cutting and so perfect to the character that I, you know, it's really well done. I don't know that I have felt like that is one of the big issues of the season. I think I've already tried to like articulate what I think is the big issue of the season, which is like too much of a focus on the status quo. I wouldn't say that the dynamic is great when we see it in scenes like this and continues to be great. And I'm always a fan of getting more of it. But that's not kind of my diagnosis of the issue. I do like this whole interaction because I feel like these are people who have done terrible things to each other, unforgivable things to each other, but they kind of, on some level, still love each other, you know? And that kind of is true of any family, right? So, and you get that here, the reference to that note that Shiv published, but he's still really clearly very happy to see them. So, so anyway, I really like this interaction that they had. So,
yeah. So Roman gives Kendall a card from Logan, claiming it's from both of them. And when Kendall opens it, he sees that Logan has crossed out the happy birthday that was printed in it and written cash out and fuck off underneath. And folded inside is a proposal for Kendall to sell his shares in the company. He is obviously upset about this, but when Naomi wonders if having no further entanglements with his hateful relatives and also $2 billion would be such a bad outcome, he seems like he's actually considering buying her a huge diamond and some newspapers and moving to Marrakesh to have sex and get high all the time.
Yeah, and I think this really goes to the question of what is driving a character like Kendall at all at this point, you know? I feel like we started to get tantalizing hints of it this season, and then now that the Justice storyline has gone away, like, I'm not sure what Kendall's arc is going to be. And maybe we'll find out more in the last two episodes about it, right? But
yeah.
I do also think it's interesting that this is a reversal of basically the exact same scene from season two, where Naomi was deciding whether or not to sell Pierce.
Right.
Which is a thing that never ended up happening, as far as I can recall.
Right.
Right. Like,
yes. Well, it's back in play maybe in this episode, so it didn't.
Right. The Pierce sale never completed, although she was for it by the end of it. But I mean, it reminds me of, this is a thing that's been going on recently, Tara, where Elon Musk has been doing a lot of tweeting recently, or actually always, I would say. He went after Bernie Sanders recently for like unprovoked, you know, like, or relatively unprovoked. And it's like, I saw a lot of reactions to that. That's like, if I had $1 billion, it would be hard, like, for my family to ever hear from me again,
right.
Let alone
yes.
a bunch of internet strangers that I don't give a fuck about. Like,
yeah, people say that all the time. If I was as rich as X, you would never hear from me again.
You would never hear from me because I would not be here dancing for your approval
yeah.
if I had no godly, earthly reason to do so, right?
Like, yes.
And anyway, it's just like there is a hole inside these people that money cannot fill, basically. You know?
Yeah. Well, yes. And it seems like this is the last stage. I mean, Kendall, as far as we know, doesn't know that the investigation is off, right? We have not seen that he knows that. This is just yeah. a leak that got to Jerry. So his dream is to be like, his dream is to have the end of episode 5 where he's on stage reading the names of, you know, victimized yeah. women from the cruise ships, except with the reaction of everyone in the audience applauding him because they think he's great.
Yeah.
Like, that's what Kendall wants. He wants to be the good billionaire in charge of Waystar.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is never going to, it's just never going to happen.
Yes. Yes.
Agreed. You know, whether he cashes out or not, he's never going to be back in the fold running things. And the other thing is that I think he's, from the very first episode, he's thought of himself as the, you know, the best business person, despite evidence in that very episode from the Rob Yang character, whose name I can't remember now because we haven't seen him in so
long. Lawrence?
Yes. Lawrence Yee. Yes. Who Kendall's, you know, tries to kiss up to him and be like, we're both cool guys. And Lawrence, I just hated him from the first second they met and never stopped, you know?
Yes, yes.
And there's more of that in this episode, too, going back to the is succession stuck in a rut. But the other, you know, change in that storyline is that he's thought of himself as a great businessman, but over and over, Roman keeps eating his lunch.
Right. Yeah, and we'll get to Roman in a little bit, but I kind of wish... I feel like a potentially more interesting arc for Kendall is if he was actually formidable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what the end of season 2 kind of promised
mm-hmm.
in a way that this season I don't think has really paid off is at the end of season 2, you're like, oh my gosh, this guy, he might actually have the goods to take on Logan, but now we find he is actually just as ineffectual as always.
Exactly.
Which is a story that is compelling, but I feel yeah. like it was already told in season 1 and 2. You know
yes.
what I mean?
Yes, yeah.
So,
absolutely.
Anyway, yeah.
So, you know, maybe Kendall would have just decided Naomi was right if he hadn't gotten straight from that conversation to an update from Comfrey that Shiv and Roman asked her to get them a private room to talk to Mattson in, and then Kendall thus realized why they're actually there. And of course, we'll never know because he's not real and it didn't happen. But I still feel like even without this coincidence and despite all of Kendall's big talk of leaving Waystar, he says it to Rava for the second time this season. We'll get to her too. But Kendall doesn't really know if he's not a Roy in Royco.
Yeah, agreed. He could have peaced out a long time ago if he wanted to. So
yeah.
Yeah.
So Kendall goes to the treehouse, the super special restricted spot where Mattson's posted up, and he bars Shiv and Roman from entering. And the fight about this goes on in circles for a weirdly long time, but finally ends with Kendall making a reference to Logan's card, which is how Shiv finds out about the scheme to push him out. And upstairs, after this, Kendall tries to fuck the Gojo deal by approaching Mattson himself, and this is the Alexander Skarsgård character we're meeting for the first time in clip 3.
Here he is, Lucas Mattson, the Odin of Coden. My man, my myth, my fucking monolith. What's up, bro?
How are you?
You having a good time?
Don't look like I'm having a good time.
No, you do not.
I am not.
Still haven't figured out the socials, huh?
Dude, you should get your algo guy to fix your code.
Listen, heads up. My siblings, they're looking for you now.
Well, maybe I need to find an even more exclusive area then. Like a crawl space or something.
Yeah, maybe. They're like emissaries from the grand old Duke of old. Dad wants to buy you, so he sent his winged dildos to schmooze.
I shouldn't say anything. Even the look on my face is commercially sensitive.
But it makes no sense, correct? Amtrak buys Tesla. And if anything, you should buy him.
You think? Yeah. Well, I really appreciate your impartial read.
Yeah.
This is what I'm referring to. Like, he wants to be liked by cool people so much, and he's so uncool and such a tryhard weirdo.
I really think they do a pretty good job with this dialogue, though. And what I mean by that is, it feels very, very plausible to me
mm-hmm.
that, like, this is the dialogue of a tryhard, right? It's
yes.
not, it's not wildly, it's not like anything he says is wildly off the mark.
Right? Yeah.
You could see somebody needing to improve their algorithm or what have you, but it's sure. just, he's using the abs, the abbreviations, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, got to get your dude to tweak the algo, you know, like,
yeah.
It's just this kind of how he thinks cool people talk.
Yes. As,
but I think it's very good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then Kendall gets pulled away to talk to Rava, apparently on her way out and having brought a date we don't see, but whose name, in case it comes up again, is Gary. Kendall is just touchy about everything at this point, and when Rava doesn't praise the party to his satisfaction, he bitterly turns on her. But in the course of their conversation, two important things come up. A, she asks whether he got the gift their kids made for him, and he's alarmed that he hasn't yet. And B, when he says again that he may be leaving Waystar, she says that would be nice, particularly if it means the company's goons would stop stalking their nanny at the park to get dirt on whether Kendall has an anger problem with the kids.
Yeah, I thought this interaction was really interesting because it's basically kind of the life Kendall wants versus the life that he feels like he has to have.
You know?
The life he feels like he has to have is this party. He needs to, like, put on a good show and, you know, feel like he is projecting this air of cool.
Yeah.
But Rava's like, yeah, I'm going to have a nice glass of Chablis and turn in by 10 p.m. or whatever it was, mm-hmm. she says. And it reminds me of something my wife says, which is that there is this idea pre-COVID, I know it's hard to remember, but in pre-COVID society, there was this idea called FOMO, fear of missing out. This is still obviously the case. And you log on Instagram, you see like lots of your friends out partying and hanging out and having a blast. And you're like, oh man, like, am I missing like an amazing experience? My wife basically doesn't have that, or at least for a time did not have that. She had something called JOMO,
mm-hmm.
joy of missing out, which
yeah.
is happy to just stay home and do nothing and kind of have a peaceful evening, right?
Yes.
And I feel like as you get older, you know, many people get more JOMO than FOMO.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like, you know, Kendall is in a state of arrest development in the past. So,
yeah, for sure. But also that he wants to have a party so cool, it's going to get written up and make him
yeah.
like more of a celebrity.
Yeah.
But I'm taking it as a good sign that Rava says the kids picked rabbit wrapping paper. Like, I feel like they wouldn't if the rabbit died. So way to pull through, rabbit.
I agree. We got to assume that the rabbit is alive at this point.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes. So by the time she gets to the goon's disclosure, Rava is obviously angrier for good reason. But to that point, Natalie does such a nice job in this scene portraying Rava's like faintly amused resignation at dealing with Kendall. Like, it is, of course, going exactly the way she expected it to when she agreed to come, but she knew the blowback would be worse if she skipped it, and he's such a chore. But she picked him, and continuing to have to deal with him is her lot. And as I said during the premiere, Rava's a character who's very well drawn in both the writing and performance, I think.
Agreed.
So while Kendall's away, Roman makes it to the treehouse without Shiv and pitches Mattson himself. It's a long clip, but it's important. Clip 4.
We fit, obviously, right?
People say we're fit, yeah.
Well, I guess I do have one question, though.
Yeah, hit me up.
When will your father die?
When will my father die?
Yeah. Like, I don't want to be rude, but what kind of shape is he in? We're talking less than a year, or is more like 5 years?
Because
if it's five, that's a long time. Uh-huh. It would be better soon, wouldn't it?
No, I know. Like, we're laughing here, but, you know, that is my dad, so, you know.
Right, yeah.
Well, either
no,
there,
I can tell that it's a bit weird for you.
That's okay.
Uh-huh. It's just, I don't like the idea of a man hanging over me.
Oh, fuck yeah. Like, no, I can understand. Who the fuck wants that?
Yeah. The guru guy who's fucking bullshit, you know?
Okay.
Because it's not my world. Media.
Yeah.
So his death would clear space.
Mm-hmm.
With due respect.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, like, we're all obviously hugely looking forward to my father dying, yeah. but there's another shape to this. How about you never, ever have to speak to him? I mean, you work out of Austin, London, Stockholm, Geneva, whatever. Totally separate corporate identities. And Stargo, we Burn.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yes, please.
Oh, yeah.
Like, burn the codes and fucking acid bath those servers.
Fucking, we can do that. We can do that together. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, Gojo, full bore. I mean, our library, our firepower, our relationships for content, and, like, good shit. You know what I mean? Like, not fucking gay moms and wheelchair kids bullshit. Like, popular, actual, good shit. And on the occasion that you need to send up a fucking smoke signal from Geneva, then that goes through me.
The evolution of Roman this season is fascinating to me. Like, they keep giving us hints that his ideas, quote unquote, are all lowest common denominator pandering. Like, in the last episode, he mentioned TikTok girls with guns, no gay moms or wheelchair kids here. But in terms of effectiveness, this is what's going to work at this moment in media slash politics slash capitalism.
I love what the show has done with the Roman character.
Yeah.
I think that the first episode or the first season of the show, he is like clearly a fuck up, but he has people skills.
Yeah.
And I think that what this show is, or the arc of the last couple of seasons, this season included, is to show that that is often enough to get by in the business world, which it is in real life as well. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea of changing this guy who you like, you thought was a fuck up in the first season, you know, and changing him to someone who's actually like at this point now notched multiple wins under his belt. Right.
Yeah.
And to do so in a way that's plausible, I think is really a big accomplishment on the part of the show. So I think it's amazing what the show has done to Roman. And I think it's one of the most compelling parts of the show.
Mm-hmm.
You may have mentioned this later on in the recap. I'm sorry if I'm stepping on something else you say later, but I just really feel like season three is completely doing Shiv dirty. You know, like, virtually every episode is Shiv somehow getting humiliated in some way and like kind of complaining about being treated unfairly in some way. And it's just like, I had bigger dreams for Shiv, you know, for this show. And it's sad to see them just completely destroyed the season. So anyway, but it's just a stark contrast to what the show is doing with Roman. You know what I mean? So
yeah, well, this is what you get. She was out. She came back in. She didn't have to do that.
Yeah. Yep.
So then Roman and one other thing before we move on. So nice for Alexander Skarsgård to get to use his real accent for a change.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah. So then they go pee on Roman's phone while it tries and fails to load Waystar's streaming app. Streaming. Haha. Get it. Mattson isn't all the way ready to make a deal yet, but he's interested.
My favorite part of this whole thing is that it took me like a few tries to understand that they were saying Stargo, you know?
Yeah.
But Stargo is apparently Waystar Royko's streaming service. And this plotline is extremely interesting, taken in the context of HBO Go, which some of the youngins might not be old enough to remember. But before the launch of HBO Max, there was this thing called HBO Go that at launch was basically a disaster. Particularly, this was in around 2014, 2015, it struggled to stream shows like Game of Thrones during its season 4 finale and the premiere of True Detective. Like, it would go, there would be like massive outages. So the app was a piece of shit, and it was kind of a huge embarrassment to HBO during the time. And the idea that they make so many pointed, cutting remarks about Stargo in this episode that I feel like maybe some people behind the show are still smarting from the failure of HBO Go, which, as far as I understand, doesn't exist anymore.
No, it doesn't.
I think it is now HBO Max. It just basically everything's been folded in HBO Max.
That's right.
Yeah. But I just thought it was funny that they're basically like referring to their own app in this show. So
I mean, they definitely are. But like, if we had more time, I would sit here and give you my complaints about every fucking streaming app because they all have problems.
Indeed.
In my opinion, and I've compared them all extensively.
Indeed.
But moving on, then it's time for Kendall to perform. We already know his desire to express himself in front of an audience has been deeply embarrassing for him and whatever the audience is in the past. And if you've blocked it from your memory, L to the OG. This time, his concept is just as overwrought as everything else at the party. He's going to put on a tuxedo, get hoisted above the crowd on a crucifix, and sing Honesty by Billy Joel. When the Teamster is giving Kendall final safety instructions before putting him in the ring, Kendall decides it's not cool and he isn't going to do it. And Barry is relieved. And at first I was like, maybe tell him not to do it before it gets to this point. But all we've seen this season is her trying to advise him and him ignoring her to just do whatever we want. So obviously she has given up and I don't blame her.
I mean, on the one hand, I've been complaining about how the show is repeating beats from previous seasons. On the other hand, it did deprive us of an embarrassing Kendall performance, and that is mildly sad, but I'm glad that he went a different way this time. So,
yeah, look up the lyrics to Honesty. I won't read them out here, but it's a lot. It's a very on-the-nose choice. So Kendall then goes looking for the kid's gift and gets increasingly agitated when he can't find it. And I guess Naomi thinks it's cute to stop helping him look and instead take advantage of this moment to give him her gift. Clip 5.
It's a watch.
Okay, wow. Yeah, thanks. I'm like, thanks, Nay.
Really bad at presents.
I like it.
Just
I
give it back.
No, I like it.
No,
I
it's
like
fine.
It.
It's fine.
Thanks.
It's...
Nay, is it, can I see? Is it inscribed?
No, it's
or...
just a stupid watch, okay? I'll get you something else. Do you, want a blowjob?
No, it's just... I don't want to be a dick, but I have a watch. You know, I have my watch.
It's a shitty gift, okay? I'm...
No, Nay, listen. Yeah, I'm just trying to get inside your head and figure out why you'd give me this gift.
I mean, Naomi, I know you're rich and used to people just falling over whatever you do, but like he's trying to find something that's actually meaningful right now. So if yours isn't, like, you know, he even gives her the chance to be like, when he asks if it's inscribed, like, is there something meaningful about this? But no, it's just expensive. And it's like the last straw of like, oh, no one who's here cares about me. My family of origin are all fake. This person I've chosen doesn't know me either. Like, yeah. It's just one more thing.
Kendall just wants to be understood more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing, Tara. I will likely never be a billionaire, but something I would work out if I was a billionaire is some kind of gifting policy amongst my loved ones and friends.
Yeah.
So as an example, I might say, hey, look, we're all millionaires here, because probably if I was a billionaire, I'd only hang out with millionaires. You know what
I'm
saying?
Yeah, of course.
We're all millionaires here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not even worry about gifts, you know, to each other. Here's the hard and fast rule. No physical goods, homemade stuff, or experiences only. And that's kind of the hard line. Like, make the policy clear with everyone so that you don't wind up in a situation like this. Then again, I am somebody who says things outright that other people just kind of bottle up because they don't want to make things socially awkward. I, however, mostly don't care about that stuff. So, but I don't know about
like...
you. Would you, let's say you're a billionaire, Tara.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
How would you handle gifting with your, let's say you're a billionaire. You invited me to your party at some big, you know, shindig in Austin.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, and what would you say about the gift policy, you know, beforehand? Like, what would you say?
I would say no gifts.
No gifts. You'd say
yes.
No gifts. So that would make the guy who gave Kendall a motorcycle feel pretty stupid then.
It would be on the invitation. But I would also say, like, in this case, what he should have done if he wanted to, like, challenge her to give him something meaningful, which, you know, maybe he didn't even know that he did want that until she didn't, was set up a max value. Like, say you can get me something
right.
For $25 or less.
$25, right, exactly.
Just to really make her think.
Yeah, exactly. I would agree. I would agree that a $25 thoughtful gift is way better than a, you know, $50,000 not thoughtful gift, right?
Yes.
So,
which is probably what that watch is. Like, it
yes.
was probably some absurd... certain
yes.
thing that no normal person would ever wear because they would be too paranoid.
Yes. Perhaps like a Patek Philippe or something like that. Anyway,
yes.
Not that I look at expensive watches, Tara.
Certainly not. But the point, yeah, not that I look at expensive purses either. But the point is, like, this is, once again, Kendall not knowing what he wants so that
right.
he can't ask for it.
Yes.
You know?
Indeed. And or
that,
having a very poorly communicated gift policy. But yes.
Yes. And I'll also say, Kendall was, back to your Jomo point, he was really shitty to Rava before when he was describing her ideal birthday party of going out with a few friends, having dinner, drinking 3 glasses of wine and going home early. And she was like, that sounds great, actually. And I bet now he thinks that sounds pretty good, too.
Indeed.
So then Shiv and Roman find their way back to each other. And as soon as she hears that he almost closed Mattson, they have an extremely fucked up fight. Clip 6.
You're having a very bad day. I know that.
but hearing that you have to continue to share your apartment with the old meat wardrobe, but, you know, try to keep your wig on, yeah?
I'm the one in the functional relationship.
Sure you are. I saw you, you know? I saw you sipping dad's champagne, looking like you were sucking a lemon.
I don't drink on work days because I have self-control. Days.
Okay, that's what that is. Okay, I thought maybe you were thinking about all the dick you were going to ride when he was inside.
Fucking God. You know what? No one likes talking about me fucking guys as much as you do. Do you know that?
Mm.
Why is that? Is that because you're the COO who can't fuck?
Did you think Tom was going to jail? Did you?
I'm happy.
Did you?
Jail.
Oh, I'm sure you are. You look really happy. Did you think he was, though? Maybe there's a chance he was going to jail. Maybe Dad was going to go to jail. Fuck, maybe I was going to go to jail. And because Kendall's... that it was all about you. You thought it was ladies' night and they were playing your song, but guess what? You were wrong. All the men got together in a man club and we decided, sweetheart, everything's fine, so just...
You know, he is using you as a messenger boy, but as usual, you're too fucking dumb to see it.
It's difficult. I get it. It's very difficult for you to have to do the dance for Dad because you just suck at dancing.
You're a piece of shit, you know that?
Turns out he loves it when I do the daddy dance, but I guess that's because he loves me. He loves fucking me, and he just doesn't want to fuck you anymore.
What are you even talking about?
Yeesh.
Got pretty graphic at the end there.
Yeah. We're getting into a lot of areas that you maybe shouldn't discuss.
Making the subtext text there.
Yes.
The yes.
But it's not over. That's when Kendall comes through, clip 7.
You're both full of shit, and you came here to fuck me behind my back, and you're ghouls, and you're disgusting.
Sorry. Whoops.
Can we get them up?
Oh, get them out. It's a little late for that, buddy. I already spoke to Matson, who hates you, by the way, and laughs at you constantly.
Just stop.
Oh, what? Go easy on birthday, bully?
Did you come here to see me at all? You didn't, did you, shit?
Well, look, we haven't been getting along that great lately, so what do you think? Surprise.
Gojo was my idea. You stole my idea.
You stole my idea. What are you, fucking 6? Dude, you lost. No big deal. No need to cry about it. You lost.
You like the spying, Shiv? On my daughter? On your niece? You like that?
Okay, lay off the drugs, Kat.
Not a fucking big deal. Who gives a shit?
We are? Spying?
Yes, of course. Oh, come on. Of course we are. It's a fucking party game. He's in Dad's shit. So we're up in his. Everybody's in the shit. Don't
no, okay,
like
that is disgusting.
Clean. It's disgusting. What, you're siding with him now? Traitor?
I'm just saying there's a line, bro. Fucking Sophie and Iverson were kids.
There's a fucking line now? No line for him. No line for you, but there's a line for me? You're a bunch of stuck-up cunts who can't fucking bear to see me win. That's it. That's all this is.
You're not a real person. You know that? You're not a real person. You're not real.
Pretty brutal. Pretty brutal.
Yeah. We've seen a lot of venomous conversations among these people, but this one still shocked me. And so to get back to your point earlier about this season's been really hard on Shiv, this is the second thing she finds out that other members of the inner circle are doing to Kendall that she didn't know about.
Yeah. Yeah. She's kind of just being left out of everything now. You know, it's hard to see how she comes back from this, but I do think Roman's transformation to the full-blown sociopath is really compelling to watch.
So. Yeah. Yes. But this is what makes me wonder if the end of her storyline is that she does get out because it's like things have gone too far and there is a conscience in there mm-hmm. deep down somewhere yeah. that she actually can still be shocked by stuff like this enough that she doesn't want to be in the company anymore. Because what she says to Roman is, you're the messenger boy and you're too dumb to see it. Whereas like she was just the lady window dressing when they were having woman problems with the cruises.
Yeah.
You know, this applies to both of them.
I wish that either Kendall or Shiv and or both were like kind of more formidable, you know?
Yes.
But it's hard to write characters that are formidable and then like keep getting into interesting and new different situations, you know? So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's just like Kendall is really pathetic this episode and Shiv also kind of pathetic this episode. Kind of a bummer.
Yeah. But the problem with the two of them is like what we saw at the end of the second episode, which is like she was close to being on his side, but neither of them
yeah.
could like be vulnerable and just say like, I need you. Or
right.
whatever. Like yeah. she couldn't admit that she feels that things are happening at Waystar that are like, you know, just fundamentally morally wrong. And he couldn't say, I can't do this without you. So yeah. both of them were just stuck in their positions.
Yeah. Fair point.
So as Kendall's leaving, Roman like playfully shoves him, but he shoves him too hard and he falls. And it's like just the last indignity. And Roman calls Logan victorious. Kendall goes home with Naomi defeated. And the last shot is, or the last scene is him looking down on the party from the balcony at his place. And he's in an A-team blanket, and this is just picky, but that show was off the air in 1987. So if Kendall is turning 40, he was 6 at that time. He is too young for that reference. Also, Comfrey mentions...
He could have watched A-team as a kid. You know, I think that's plausible, right?
I guess. I don't know. It feels like it would be like Power Rangers or something for someone that his age.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that plus He-Man lunchboxes, which we also hear about from Comfrey, that was like off the air when Kendall was 4. But the person who is right, the right age for these cultural touchstones is Jesse Armstrong, who is 10 years older than Kendall.
I don't know, Tara. I mean,
I'm just saying.
I'm around Kendall's age, and I remember playing with He-Man toys when I was a kid. So,
all right.
But would I make that into a lunchbox that everyone gets at my 40th birthday? I don't think so. But yeah, it's good to locate us in time in the show. I do appreciate that. So there's a few other things that happened this episode, right?
There's a few. Greg goes against Kendall's express wishes and asks Comfrey out, and she says yes out of spite. Seems like partly, mostly, because she hates Kendall, and it's understandable. Tom at the party does the wrong drugs in the wrong order, as he puts it, and he takes Greg's happiness very personally because he feels he should be happier, and happiness is a zero-sum game, and Greg is taking his.
I also don't think you mentioned the encouragement wall. Which
compliment tunnel,
whatever
is that
it,
what it was something
pretty amazing,
one
pretty
the
amazing.
Other
love that yeah.
Mm-hmm. Connor refuses to take his coat off at the party, and Kendall takes that very, very personally and keeps acting like, you know, it's no big deal, but just tell him to take it off, and is still mad about it as he's leaving.
Yeah,
still no Marsha.
I'm so curious what's going on with that. Like,
yeah,
it feels like a plot line they jettisoned for like logistical reasons rather than storytelling ones.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because they make this whole big deal about Marsha kind of coming back into the fold in, I think, episode 2 or 3. And then like we never hear from her again. And now Logan might be having this other affair. It just doesn't feel, I can't imagine that that's what they intended to do with that plot line. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's weird.
A couple of other things I wanted to mention. One is, I think this was right. Like Shiv takes the drugs this episode, right? Or, you know, kind of is dancing uncontrollably on the floor, right? And mm-hmm. then as they're riding home in the limo afterwards, it kind of felt almost like a reversal of the typical Tom Shiv dynamic, right? Where like Tom's like, I'm going to be out until 5 a.m. tonight, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Shiv's like, I'm very depressed and I'm going home and sleeping.
Yeah.
And then there's this weird moment where Roman says to his limo, like, hey, I'm going to walk home, you know, like, and I thought that was like setting up like Roman's going to get assaulted or something on the way, you know, something terrible is going to happen to Roman, and then nothing happened. Maybe it's just like he's walking
he's
home
fine.
In triumph, you know, but like, I don't know. It was kind of I was wondering if they were going to do something with that. But anyway, I doubt that's where the next episode's going to begin, because that's not what the show's like. But
I doubt it, too. It's a pretty safe neighborhood.
Okay. All right. Well, so that's what happened in the episode.
Yeah.
Before we get to our winners and losers and our favorite quote of the week, we like to throw in a plug for what we're doing when we're not recapping Succession. First of all, you can find more of my stuff on my Twitter at Dave Chensky. That's Dave Chen, SKY. But I host podcasts such as Culturally Relevant, where I interview interesting writers, actors, and directors, as well as on the Filmcast. And Tara Ariano, if people are enjoying your recap stylings, where can they find more of your work?
Well, when I'm not recapping Succession, I'm currently recapping Melrose Place, as in the one from the 1990s, at Again With This. And I also co-host the podcasts Listen to Sassy and Extra Hot Great, a general TV podcast. And you can find all of those everywhere you find podcasts like this one.
All righty. Well, let's get to winners and losers for the week. Every week we choose a winning Roy, a losing Roy, a winning non-Roy, a losing non-Roy. And then we also give our favorite quote of the week. But Tara, your winning Roy of the week.
I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. We talked about him a lot. Roman.
Gotta be Roman, right? He has not necessarily brokered the deal, but gotten the deal to the next phase.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty impressive. Legitimately impressive.
So. Rising in the ranks of evil.
Yeah, totally. So he is the winning Roy for this week. Losing Roy, probably the one that ended up the episode curled up in a 18 blanket, right?
Yeah, it was not a happy birthday for poor Kendall.
Agreed, agreed. So losing Roy of the week is Kendall Roy. Winning non-Roy.
I have Lucas Mattson because it looks like he's got a pretty sweet deal and will not have to deal with an old man while he waits for him to die.
Pretty good deal. I agree. That sounds pretty sweet. I wrote the audience at Kendall's party who did not have to endure the performance that he almost gave, but then chickened out at the last minute for. So I think they ended up in a better spot.
Yeah. Although we should say that in the cold open, we do get to hear Jeremy Strong as Kendall singing a little bit of Honesty just as a test. And, you know, as you would expect from a trained actor, he's had some vocal training too. He's a pretty good singer.
Yeah, yeah. And yet still a little bit cringe there.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah. Yes.
All right. Losing non-Roy.
So Kendall tells, I don't know if it was supposed to be part of his performance or just like maybe they were going to open for him.
Right, yes.
But he...
So many questions, Tara. This is literally the most important issue of the whole episode.
Yeah, we never find out. But so Kendall tells Rava he's found this act called Tiny Wu-Tang, who... I think I missed if they were even kids or little people, but they do Wu-Tang covers.
Mm-hmm.
And because he has decided to scrub his performance, he has to tell Comfrey and Barry, you know, tell Tiny Wu-Tang they're off the hook or, you know, say you're sorry or whatever.
I agree. This party full of New York socialites and influencers will never know the stylings of Tiny Wu-Tang. And that is a tragedy.
Not until Machine Gun Kelly has his birthday party there next week or something.
I really hope that the rest of the season deals with this grave injustice that's been committed against Tiny Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
But I'm not optimistic about it. I'm not going to lie.
It's a bummer.
All right. Every week we choose a quote of the week, our favorite quote and why. Tara, what was your favorite quote?
Just a simple one. When champagne is being poured in his office after they've found out that the Department of Justice is dropping their investigation. Logan toasts to justice.
To justice in parentheses that one can, you know, buy or influence.
Yes, to justice as I interpret justice to mean in my favor. Yeah.
Indeed.
A little ironic.
My favorite quote is from Shiv. Kendall says, "What, no card? I'm disappointed because you normally write me such lovely letters." And she says, "Oh, yeah, I couldn't find one that said both happy birthday and get well soon."
Mm-hmm.
End quote. Every one of these characters, they always just have like the perfect rejoinder.
They do.
And it's just, oof. I love the writing. It's exquisite. It's biting. It's upsetting. It's sad. But it is also part of what makes Succession what it is. So I think that's it for this week's episode, Tara.
Yep.
Only two episodes of Succession remain for the rest of the season. And I honestly don't know where it's going from here. Like, because this whole justice thing is tied up, like, what dramatic stakes remain? You know,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, Tom seemingly out of jail, like, I don't know what the next two... I mean, I have some sense of what the next two episodes, where they'll be set,
mm-hmm.
but, like, what are the dramatic stakes? I am curious. So, we'll see. I mean, do you have any thoughts on, like, where the show could go that's an interesting direction from here? Probably the most interesting sort of storyline is like the Roman Shiv conflict, right? And like
yes.
where that's going. So there's probably going to be some kind of big blow up between the two of them. But
yeah.
Beyond that, I'm not really sure if the Justice Department investigation is basically over. Like, I don't know where the show is going right now.
Yeah. I guess we'll see.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And we hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the podcast. Until next week, we'll see you later.